Why is recorded in front of a live studio audience.
So we need to talk about this woman on Delta, because this story is amazing.
It's amazing.
So there's a bunch of different things about this story that makes it amazing. Mm-hmm. And we can discuss in detail what is your favorite part.
yes.
So this woman on a flight from Syracuse, New York to Atlanta, was caught trying to nurse her cat.
Yes.
And was repeatedly told to put it back in its cage, and she refused. So first off, the first thing I love about this, a message was sent to the Aircraft Communications Addressing and Reporting System. I believe the acronym is ACARS, A-C-A-R-S.
Yes.
To tell the crew in Atlanta, where they were landing, that the passenger in seat 13A is, quote, breastfeeding a cat and will not put it back in its carrier when requested. Because the internet is a beautiful thing, somebody was able to get a picture of that request.
But of course.
And
I'm
then
still hung up on the fact that the cat is hairless.
Oh, you're right. We buried that lead, didn't we?
Right. Because
yeah.
She was literally trying to breastfeed Mr. Bigglesworth.
Right. No, if you were nursing a calico, go with God.
Or a Persian, like cuddled yeah. up with your Persian. That's like, you may as well have like an adorable fur coat on, you know?
That's a pashmina, right.
It is a pashmina.
This is Why, with your hosts, Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling.
One of the flight attendants got onto TikTok, because this is what we've become as a society,
yes.
and talked about it. And she mm-hmm. said, quote, this woman had one of those like hairless cats swaddled up in a blanket so it looked like a baby. This has got to be, these next two sentences are maybe my favorite sentences I've read all year. Her shirt was up and she was trying to get the cat to latch and she wouldn't put the cat back in the carrier, period. And the cat was screaming for its life.
It's so terrible. It's terrible. And it makes me sad because then when he's like screaming, then I start to feel like it is animal abuse.
Yes.
It's horrible.
Yes.
Like,
and then, so all of this happens, all of this goes down. People are talking about it on TikTok, elsewhere.
Yes.
So Delta is asked for a comment. And instead of saying, we don't know, we're investigating this incident, something like that, they come back and reassert the company's policy on women feeding their children on flights. Delta fully supports a woman's right to breastfeed on board Delta and Delta Connection aircraft and in Delta facilities.
So it's okay that it was a cat. Her cat.
It's just like, we're going to move all around this and talk about something that has nothing to do with the story.
Well,
and yeah. Do you think somebody is out there actually being like, you know, I'm going to cancel my Delta flight. They do not support nursing animals on planes.
No, but I do feel that they probably felt they needed to say that, because even if they had said that nursing a cat isn't really part of that, under
right.
the, it doesn't really fall under that, there may have been some angry women out there, or people out there, I shouldn't gender specific.
And then my follow-up question is, why does this never happen on a flight that I'm on?
I know.
The weirdest thing I get is like, we're all out of soda and the only thing we have is squirt. Like, that's it. That's,
wait, they had that's, squirt on your flight? Nobody ever has squirt on the flight.
I feel like I learned a lot reading your book, starting with Don't Go to a Sex Club in Allentown.
That is the takeaway. That is the main takeaway, the main purpose for writing this book.
That's what I thought.
To really caution people about going to swinger sex clubs in Allentown.
No, there's
how many
a bunch
are
of
there
questions
in Allentown?
Hopefully zero. Hopefully There was that one that we wandered into that one night, and hopefully that was the last time they ever tried to make one there, and hopefully it's done now. Yeah.
Now we, again, like I was mentioning, we have tried to have people who have participated in the lifestyle on the show before, and they have prepared skittish. So we have some questions that we could do sort of a speed round here.
I love it.
Because we have not visited a sex club. So
let's speak for yourself.
Okay. I have not visited a sex club.
Thank you.
Is there a coat check? And if so, what do you do with your ticket?
Oh my goodness. There is a coat check, Luke. There is a coat check. And the ticket went in my husband's pocket.
But at some point, his pants would be coming off. And if you aren't careful, you could literally end the night by getting in someone else's pants.
You could. You could do that. You know, we did have wristbands on with a number on the wristbands that correlates to the bottle that you have behind the bar because it's BYOB.
Wow.
So okay. I am thinking a better strategy for this would be to coordinate the wristband, bottle, and the items in the coat check. I think they just ripped it off. They think they ripped it off like they do at every other coat check.
Is there a password? And is that password always Fidelio? No.
No?
No password. You have to bring in your ID. That's another thing too. Like we had to leave cell phones in the car, but fair. You have to bring in your driver's license so they can confirm you are of age and that you are a paid member. Because every club that we went to, you had to have an annual membership in addition to buying the tickets for the event that you were attending.
I get you coming and going.
You just waited to say that.
I won't cop to that.
You've been practicing.
You also mentioned the tours that they always say, oh, well, here's where you can get changed or whatever. Here's the showers. Do you have to bring in your own little shower tote? Or is it like a Holiday Inn where they have soap and stuff that you can just take?
It's like a Holiday Inn, Luke.
Okay.
They have like little caddies there in the shower. Like, you know, a fancy hotel would, you know, with the pump. So here is an insider story that this story is not in the book, but I'm telling it for the first time in an interview right now. We went to a club in Europe. We went to a club in Barcelona that was in a multi euro mansion up in the north end of Barcelona. And first thing is we got the cab driver to drop us off two blocks away because I didn't want him to know where he was dropping us.
Yeah, like high school, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And my husband, Manny, said, Ash, like we are literally in Barcelona. Like we are never going to see. And I couldn't have him drop us off in front of the sex party. Okay, but when we went in there, we were assigned a locker that had fresh robes and like flip-flop slippers in it because this club had a pool, which was amazing, an outdoor pool.
Heated?
You know, I'm not sure if it was heated because
maybe
it was
I'm focusing warm. On the wrong things. Yeah, sorry.
Maybe focusing keep going. On the wrong things. And then it had a cabana type thing up on the roof where there were all these beds and like these tents with like drapey canopies. The atmosphere was amazing.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
That's all. If all sex clubs were like that, I would probably be there all the time.
Yeah, it was really amazing. The pool with the, you know, with the lights coming out of the pool on the deck with the sexy music. It was a really cool atmosphere.
Were the people sexier by being in a sexier atmosphere?
Well, there was this one in particular. His name was Manu, which is
of course it was.
Like, yeah, which is like just the Catalonian version of Manny, my own husband. It was just like, okay, on Seinfeld, you know how there's like Jerry and Bizarro Jerry?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Right. It was like American Manny and Barcelona Manny. Mm-hmm. And the Barcelona Manny, it was younger, taller, broader chest. could speak.
I'm not feeling too confident about American Manny right about now.
Yeah. Not speak a word of English, though. That's the thing that we didn't realize.
Maybe Anne.
Oh, that could be good.
Yeah. Wow, these people really don't speak any English here. So that, it was really interesting how much verbal communication goes down, even in a casual conversation with another couple at a club, because not being able to communicate at all was shockingly difficult for me.
I'm comedian David Race in Los Angeles. I host a celebrity-filled paranormal talk show like no other. Monstrosity has great guests answering weird questions. You won't believe the combo of celebrities and paranormal experts who've been on this show. I guarantee you'll like Monstrosity, or you get your time back. Go to monstrositypodcast.com right now and take a look.
And you talk in the book about you and your husband going with sort of the idea of like, we're just going to go, we're going to check this out and see what it is. And that the two of you end up spending time together. And it's sort of the watching other people being watched. And then there's also other people swinging. What is that percentage in most clubs of people who are just there for the voyeurism, the exhibitionism of it? And how much are there for the actual like swinging?
I would say about half of the people there on a given night are just there for the atmosphere. Just there for the atmosphere. They're going to be intimate with their partner there or when they go home. Right. It's not even that everybody gets down there. Mm-hmm. And in most clubs, you could get down in a private room with the door closed or in like a big open area where you have your own space. No one's touching you, but, you know, it's open air. People are looking at you. You are seeing other people as well. And then I would say about 25% of people who are there are actually there with another couple. Like it's already, or like they meet them there, they go there together, you know, they're friends who hook up, you know, double date friends with benefits. And they like, even though they could just be in their rec room, why did I go back to the 70s? I'm not sure why.
Because they could just that's like the ultimate.
Womp, womp, womp.
But isn't that like the first thing you think of when you think of swinging for some reason is always the 70s. It's always, there was that TV show called Swing Town that was all ultimate 70s, like sunken living room, pool,
dresses, the key party, things like that. Okay. So sort of Heidi, but I was born in 1980. So I kind of, but I had these like fantasies in my mind about lots of people in a room having sex, like for a very, very long time. And then I meet my husband and he's the first person I talk to about that. Right. So we met right out of college. So I guess I didn't really have very much like in media that way. So when we first explored what kinds of clubs are there out there for a sexy atmosphere, I don't even know if we like knew swing lifestyle was like the term to put in. I'm not really sure. But then we found this club down in Philly that was called Club Kama Sutra. And we went once, and I talk about that in the book. Super, and that's everybody's favorite sexy scene. It's chapter 4. It's actually an award-winning sex scene now.
Well, congratulations.
Yes. That is, that's got to be center on the mantle.
Yeah
don't ask me what the trophy looks like.
Yeah. So, and it wasn't a sex book awards. It was just like a book awards. And like, that was the only sexy category, by the way. The trophy is not phallic in any way, but I do still like it. Anyways.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So
that chapter where we are just like wide-eyed, and we're so young when we're there too. We're like 22 and 23 years old. And a lot of the visitors at the club were like just a little older than us, right? Like late 20s, early 30s, like but we walk in and it's like almost like there's like this neon sign above you, like rookie, freshie, everybody's super, but my husband and I don't like going to bars or anything. And even my husband's a huge sports fan. He would rather watch alone in his living room than even be at a sports bar because people aren't focused. They're not watching. They're like, get distracted. He really loves, he's a purist that way. And like, he wants to watch it on his couch. So for us going out and having everybody be so friendly and it's a sexy atmosphere that then we're like ripping each other's clothes off for days afterwards. We were like, this was the best night of our whole life. Like we didn't know this much fun was possible. And then in the book, I say that we were watching the news, like Fox Philly News one night, and it's like, local sex club shut down for L&I violations. And we looked at each other like, no. So then we got back to the work of being responsible adults and got married and had a bunch of kids. Didn't go out again for a decade.
So what took you back out?
What took us back out was that our youngest, we have three children. Our youngest was finally old enough to go for sleepovers at the grandparents with the older two. And we were incredibly disconnected, incredibly. We are both very good at making everything look good on the outside, even when the inside does not match that. So my husband played football for Temple and grew up in a Greek family. So he can ignore when his body is saying no or his mind is saying no. And he can just say, yes, mom, it's like this, mom, yeah. And then like turn around and do something different, right? I grew up in figure skating where the name of the game is making everything look effortless and beautiful, sure, regardless of whether your body is telling you to stop or your mind is telling you like, this isn't right. I think I'm dying. Like, I can't do this anymore. And in that aesthetic sport, you have to do it with a fucking smile on your face. So it wasn't until I was about 35 years old and we're 10 years and three kids into our marriage that I felt so disconnected from my husband, but so ashamed for not being more grateful for my lovely looking life, that we were both just looking, we both just thought we're stressed. We're overworked. We're overwhelmed. Remember that one thing we did that was like just for fun? Like we didn't even have a mortgage at this point. Like we had been so damn responsible for that decade that we were just like, okay, let's find something like that again. And Google turned up way more results this time than it did 10 years prior to that.
Is there like a Yelp for sex clubs?
You know what? Some sex clubs are rated on Yelp, which is so weird.
Oh, they're at the Yelp for sex clubs is Yelp.
It's called Yelp. because if something is recorded in Yelp as a business, then it's open for reviews. So actually I think I do remember reading a Yelp review that like it was really complaining about the potholes in the parking lot of the sex club. Yeah.
Look.
Because that's the big thing to worry
about. Yeah, they all have really bad they all have really bad potholes. That is, I think, across the board requirement for sex clubs.
That's probably a good thing to judge whether you should go in or not. Like if the parking lot's really smooth, they've been paying way too much attention to the asphalt and not to the fun inside.
So exactly.
If you get a good parking lot, time to go.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What about sort of the variants of sex that someone can participate in? I know you said there's like chains and restraints and stuff. Is it sort of like a just let your freak flag fly and you do whatever you want? Or like, are you in line to get into the club and the person behind you has like a plastic kiddie pool and a bag of baked beans and you're just like, I'm not sitting next to you? How does that, can you just whatever goes?
Okay, so you can't really bring anything into the club.
Let me cross that off.
Sorry. The baked beans fantasy is going to have to be played out somewhere else. Okay. So you can't really bring anything in. I would say, so there were like whips and chains and cages and things like that. What was used the most often was just the big open pit area or the private rooms. Like, it's enough of a thrill to just have other people having sex in your vicinity, whether you are into watching or being watched, or both, that a lot of the gadgets and things weren't really what people gravitated to. If that was really their kink, I'm sure they probably had a better custom setup at home. So it's more just for the atmosphere. And that's, I didn't finish with the last 25% of people. So I said 50% of people, right? Because we left, we have 25%. What the hell are they doing? That's maybe why you thought, they have the kiddie pools and baked beans. Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So
50% there for the atmosphere, right? And they're not, them and their partner aren't going to interact with anybody else. 25%, they've already have it set. Like, they came with other friends and, you know, they're going to have sex in the same room or swap. Then the other 25%, and this was like pretty consistent every place we went. Like, it was like, and I really have a curious mind this way, going like, okay, did they know each other before? Did they not? Like, right. That, you know, right. I was really pulling in all the information as we were visiting. So that last 25% of people, they are the ones who are looking to hook up with another couple, either to just have, like, I talk in the book about the different terms, like full swap, which is you go all the way and you have intercourse with the other person's partner, and that could be same room or different room. And then there's light swap, where it's just like, maybe there's kissing, maybe there's touching, maybe just the women are interacting, whatever. So those 25% of people fit in like that area of possibility. Like, if they meet another couple who they connect with, you know, maybe we'll dance, maybe we'll talk, maybe something will happen. Or, you know, like, or like, we didn't find anybody this time, we'll just go to a room ourselves. But that door, that opportunity is always open when they go.
Did you guys have some sort of keyword or something where you could sort of say to the other one, I'm digging this or not digging this? And was that word hammer time for either one of those?
Yes and yes.
Okay, perfect.
It
hammer,
is now.
Hammer time, hammer time. Stop, hammer time.
Stop. Hammer time, go. Hammer time means go. You forgot that hammer time means go. You know what? The funny thing that I found when we would walk around clubs, because for most of our visits to those kinds of environments, we were in that 25% I just described. That, maybe something would happen, right? And it didn't always. And then once it did, it was super hot. And I was like, I like this, but I don't just want to be hooking up with randos. So let's meet someone online. And then we got into like the app kind of world, which is fascinating as well. What I found when I was walking around clubs, when I was in that headspace of, maybe we would go into the same room with someone, or maybe something would happen, I would always assess the women before the men in my mind, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it was sort of like, he's all right. Would he be pretty enough for me? Like, would Manny be attracted to her? Would my husband be attracted to her? You know, because, I need to ask him if he did the same thing or not, because I was going to say, I was going to make an assumption, but I don't think I've ever asked him. But I know for me to kind of nudge Manny and be like, let's go talk to them, I already had to have a level of confidence that like he had an attraction to that woman, and like that it would be maybe an okay thing for him, for me to, you know, nudge him about it.
How often did you find, either within yourselves or with other people, that the level of interest was one person was okay, I'm in, and the other person was like, I'm backing out. I thought I was in, but I'm not. And how awkward is that?
Yeah. All right. So we had a lot of people approach us every single time we went somewhere. A lot.
Yeah, because, like, you guys are gorgeous. Like, there's no way you're gonna get it was in like, and out like, easily.
Like a lot. A lot, but it's actually a really easy pass in a sex club. Okay. And I talk about this in the book, that it is a sexually charged environment but it is a place where no one can pretend that they don't know what consent is. So at a sex club, I've never had a man touch my back when he moves past me, no matter how crowded it is. Okay, no one would ever even put their hand on your shoulder without making eye contact and like introducing themselves, shaking hands to you and your spouse. Like, it's really, if someone had to go past you, they would hold their hands up and go, excuse me, like, and make sure they don't accidentally rub against you. And that was fascinating because, I mean, I can't ride a bus. I can't be in Target when it's crowded at the holidays. I can't go anywhere without somebody putting their hand on me to like move around my physical space. All right. And so it's not about how crowded a space is. It's about the awareness about what is acceptable and not. Okay. So we had a lot of people approach us, and it really is an easy pass. You can just talk to somebody. Just because you start a conversation doesn't mean you're saying, oh yes, we want to go jump in bed with you. You can just have a conversation like you would at a neighbor's goddamn barbecue. Like that is the way that you talk to people. You just talk, and then, but you may slip in there like, oh yeah, we came here for the first time a couple of years ago. We had a full swap with this person, blah, blah, blah. Or our first time was like this, like, you're going to be dropping in some pretty personal information, sure. But the level of, it's a casual conversation. It's just like a, hey, how you doing kind of conversation. And all you have to say is, hey, maybe we'll talk to you guys later. And then you walk away and they know, all right, that's as far as they wanted to go in the conversation. And they also know you might be in the 50% of people that aren't going to hook up with anyone.
Right.
Right. So it's not like, it's not a hard slight or something for them. So every situation that we got into, the two of us and the other couple were all interested in going into a room together or something. When we met the other couple on the lifestyle dating app, that was not the situation. Me and the guy hit it off immediately. Well, I thought they were both nice. And then his wife said to me, oh my God, he is so into you. Like, I've never seen him like this before. Okay. And this should have been the huge red flag. And I'm sure it was for readers in my book. But for me, I had been married to the same person for 10 years. We had been, you know, working diligently as like good little adults, building this family. But we had become increasingly disconnected emotionally. Like, we had sex regularly, but like, we didn't even say hello to each other when the other person came in the house, even though I'd asked for this over and over. One of the things about being raised in Manitoba, is like, you don't whine when you're not getting something, right? So I felt like, all right, the only thing that hurts worse than like not having my needs met is then saying, hey, I sort of have this little need. And then him going like, really? So I sort of shut that down. So when I started getting this validation and attention from this other guy, Brad, I turned into like a crazy boy, crazy adolescent / like nymphomaniac. It was like, I was like a sex zombie, right? It was like my brain cells went away. I just wanted to exchange like sexy texts with this guy all day. Like, I forgot to pick up my kid at camp. My littlest was a toddler. I would be like texting Brad and an automatic door almost killed him. Like, I was not in a good place. But this rush of attention that I had convinced myself I didn't even want was exhilarating.
It's interesting because throughout the book, I mean, you talk about your ice skating career, both growing up and then as a teacher and somebody kind of starting a school in the city, and the level of professionalism with everything, like you just said. And as things get more complicated in the book, you keep talking about there's no one I can go talk to about this. This is something I can't let out. What made you decide that this was something you needed to write out as a book? Because that is that's more than just turning to your best friend and going, here's a crazy story.
It is, isn't it? Okay. I had always wanted to be a writer. Figure skating has a way of taking over a life, sort of like a forest fire, leaving few resources and little attention for anything else. So it was never my plan to stay in skating. I loved and appreciated the fact that I got to be so intimately connected with so many adolescents over so many years. Like at the biggest, I had 150 athletes on 10 teams. Some of my athletes would stay with me for 10 years. Like they would come in as a 7-year-old and stay with me till they graduated high school. So I really loved that connection and that support I was able to give to them, to the athletes and their families. I kept, especially, I felt so lonely and so ashamed when my marriage was at its hardest part. Because not only did I realize, okay, I am really fucking sad here and I should be so grateful. I was shaming myself because I thought I should be so grateful. Also, the reason I realized my marriage was shitty was because I went to sex clubs and I actually started dating another man. Okay, how do I tell people that? There were just so many layers around it. And actually I had told one person and they were like, okay, yeah, that's no big deal, whatever, whatever. And then they spoke to their husband about it. And then the person who I told came back to me and she was like, you're like a sex worker. You are like a whore. You are like, and I was like, you know, the only person who I told, right, turned around on me like so, so strongly. And I was like, all right, none of my friends are going to want to, I was certain that none of my friends would ever trust me again, you know, even in a relationship or friendship, because they'd think I wanted to have sex with their husband or whatever. I just had all of these ideas. So it was the hardest part of my marriage and I was lonelier than ever. Even though I had this enormous community around me, I felt terrified to go to anybody.
It would be weird to go to the teen ice skaters.
Yeah, especially the teen ice skaters.
Yeah.
Not the first call.
No. Hey girls, you want to talk about that traveling three spoke? Oh, Ashley's having problems with her swinger boyfriend.
They probably would have way rather talked about that. Oh my God,
loved it.
And a lot of them have since read my book. A lot of them are in college or older and have read my book. And they do love it. They really love it. So when I kind of turned a corner and started coming out of this hardest part of my marriage, I thought, holy shit, there were moments, and by moments, I mean months, at a time that I didn't think I was going to make it out. Like I literally didn't think I was, I allude to a bit of the depression and the darkness in the book, but it was even more than that. And I thought marriage is so hard across the board. Like, why do we not have more conversations about just all the ways it can go sideways, right? All the ways that relationships are hard as adult humans, right? We have like the really fake, like momfluencer marriage goals shit on social media. And then we have like, you know, just stories of people being so happy they're divorced, but we don't have any stories of like, oh, our marriage was so fucking messy and this was hard and this was hard and this is how we got through it. Like I didn't see that anywhere. And I wanted to write, it's a very cliche, but it's so true. I wanted to write the book that I wished I had during that time. And I was certain I could never admit that these things had actually happened. So I started it as a screenplay 2 years before I wrote it as a book, because I was like, the first scene is me standing in line at an invite only sex party in New York City, right? That looked like a casting call for The Bachelor. I was like, I can never admit that I did this. So I'll write it as a screenplay. And my husband was totally on board. He's like, your movie's amazing. I put it on a shelf. And then for 2 years, he was like, anytime we would see a movie trailer or watch a movie, he would say, your movie's way funnier than this, your movie. And then one day I said, well, here's the thing. I'm not finishing it because I don't want to write it as a movie. And he was like, what does that mean? And I said, I want to write it as a memoir, because I started sharing just little bits on social media, writing essays, and people just resonated with it so deeply. I said, I think this story is going to mean something to some people and help some people. And I want them to be able to put the face to the story.
That's very brave.
Okay, thank you. I told myself for a long time in the writing process that I was being brave, but I don't actually think it's brave. I think I am in a privileged situation that I can tell this story and still be safe.
That's true, but right? But we live in a, yeah. It's still brave because
thank
we,
you.
We
I just
live
want to
in
say
a
it's
society.
Like, yeah, well, we live goes, in a society.
What?
Yeah, we live in a society where it would be easier if I let this fly under the radar, right? And I can do that. We have pretty Christmas cards every year, you know, like I coach soccer in our township. Like, you know, it's that, oh, you know, sunny, easy marriage and family. We could actually pull off that facade pretty easily. Some families don't have that choice, right? Same-sex parents, trans parents, they don't have the choice. Like, do I want to be public about, you know, our inconsistencies with mainstream, right? So then I started thinking, okay, I'm actually safe to tell this story. So that gives me even more impetus to tell it.
Sure.
Right? Because I'm going to be financially stable even if I tell this story. I'm going to be physically safe in my home and my family even if I tell this story. So thank you for the brave, but I know I wanted to look at that in a different way.
Yeah.
And that even came up in conversations with me and my husband when I was talking about, yes, I want to write this as a memoir, because we were having, it was a process over a few months of him asking questions and things coming up, you know, that he hadn't thought of. And one of the questions he asked me was, what if kids aren't allowed to come play at our house anymore? Right. Because our kids' friends, their parents know that we went to sex clubs. And I said, oh, like that's interesting. And I brought this question to my therapist and she said, well, Ashley, you're raising three children who are going to be definitely white, probably men in America. If they did receive some discrimination because you had a super successful book, like, wouldn't that be interesting? And I thought, yes, absolutely, that would be interesting because I do want my kids to understand their privilege. But then my instinct is to just shield them from everything. But what I did was I sent early copies of my manuscript. So I emailed it to about 425 people a year and a half before the book came out, including my family, my friends, my neighbors, and my kids' friends' parents. Okay. And I just wanted to let the cat out of the bag. Like, hey, yeah, it's going to be a while before this comes out, but since your kid's always at our house or whatever, here you go. I swear people like me better.
Oh, I'm sure. Because you're, first of all, you're doing probably what a lot of people want to do, but are afraid to do. Two, you owned who you are right out of the gate and were completely true to yourself. And they didn't suddenly walk past the bookstore and see it like Luke did, you know?
Right. Right.
So
exactly. They just said, oh, so your marriage is hard too. Oh, like solidarity.
Right.
I was like, yeah. They're like, oh yeah, no. I thought you like never yelled at your kids. And I thought that like you and Manny always got along and like thing. It's like, actually, no, for nobody. Like, for nobody is that reality.
Swing by Ashley Renard is available right now wherever you get your books. For more information, to sign up for her newsletter and all sorts of other things, check out her website, ashleyrenard.com. She is also on Facebook, where she's at facebook.com/ashley.renard. And she is on Instagram at instagram.com/ashleyrenard.
You can check us out on all the various socials. Be sure to visit our website and don't forget to leave us a review.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hedquist. Our reluctant producers are John Sauvé and Sandy Stone. Our willing producers are Rachel Allen and Randy Jeanette. Our intern is Zach Jackson. This one's for Philippe. Thanks for joining us. Flash, we're coming home.
Nigel, is that you? Are you here, Nigel?